11 on WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman produces. I'm John Williams. Thanks for joining us. Mondays, we start with Elise Glink, and we've got a lot to talk about. Let's get rolling here, Elise. The news of another vaccine is out today, 95% almost effective. What's your first thought about this?
My first thought is, great, sign me up, because between the two of them, it's bound to work. And we're all going to be able to, over the next, the course of 2021, start to get back to our normal lives.
The Dow has never been higher than it was a short while ago when it was trading at 29,942, I think, was the intraday high. And who knows where it will close, but it's on track for a record close. Morgan Stanley says the S&P 500 at this rate is going to close at 9% by the end of next year. I'm reading a headline here. Morgan Stanley strategist said in a note on Monday that the S&P 500 will rise by roughly 9% by the end of next year. Yeah, it's not going to recover that much this year. Still great news on the markets, isn't it?
It is. If you actually look over the course of the year, We've come back quite a lot, but as far as the year itself is, if you look where we were in January and February and where we are today, we are above where we were. And that is, I can't tell you, in all these years that I've been watching the markets and looking at all this stuff, it's remarkable to be able to experience something as frightening and scary and deadly as this pandemic and watch the stock market by the end of this year reach new highs from where it was, even if it's only, I think, 3 or 4% above maybe the high in February. We're still in, it's really amazing.
Well, and particularly if you charted from the lows in March and April, I mean,
yes, it almost defies conversation in some ways, because you look at it and this is truly the V that everybody was talking about. You know, the problem, of course, is that our actual economic recovery is taking the letter K, where a chunk of it is going up, and, you know, sadly, a bunch of it is going down. Today we learned that Francesca's, which is a retail establishment with about 140 stores nationwide, is going to be shutting all of those stores. They may file for bankruptcy. They're trying to transition to more online sales. And so we know that we're not quite out of it, and there's still this hangover effect for a large segment of the market. In fact, today we also saw miles and miles, people in line waiting for a possible 1 of 7,000 frozen turkeys for the holiday next week in a food pantry line. So there's certainly need out there.
312-981-7200 if you have a question, and I'll just ask our audience again, what's your personal guess as to, and I'm not being silly about this, I'm just wondering where people's heads are, when do you think we're going to feel safe? And one measure, you know, one way to maybe ask yourself and answer that question would be, when will we be going to packed stadiums again? When will we be comfortable going to a Northwestern football game, a Bears game, a Cubs game, a Sox game? Maybe even indoors, right, to a Blackhawks game, say. When will we be doing that again? Yeah, maybe we'll still have masks on, but at least we'll all be shoulder to shoulder. What's your guess on that, Elise?
I think that we're looking at sometime next fall, by the time that we have enough people vaccinated and enough of our neighbors and family and friends are all vaccinated as well. So I'm going to guess probably the end of the third quarter. Hockey season sounds about right to me.
Yeah, maybe it's just sounds a long ways away, but maybe when they drop the puck next year, we'll be back at the United Center. Stay there, Elise. I've got more questions for you. 312-981-7200. Visit thinkglink.com. All of this optimism about the two vaccines now, they have not been FDA cleared and approved, though, right? I mean, it sounds like that's, I don't want to say a rubber stamp. I'm not exactly sure how these things work, but it sure sounds like they're streamlining the process for them, right, Elise?
They are, and they haven't been approved yet, although I believe the FDA said that they would do what they could to push them through as quickly as possible. So this is one reason why, even though the federal government has bought hundreds of millions of doses, or rather I should say they've reserved the ability to do that, they haven't actually gone through yet.
And the logistics issues are maybe a little bit better for Moderna in that it would not have to be as cold, right? The Pfizer vaccine needed to be 80 degrees below zero. I'm getting mixed messages. I heard that this one would need to be frozen, but maybe not as much or at every checkpoint, that at some point when it's going to be used, it would be refrigerated.
Yes, and there's differences in these vaccines and in the others that I think we'll start to hear about coming at in the next month or so, where some need one dose, some need two doses, there's storage issues with them. There still are no long-term studies yet about any possible side effects that they have. We've heard small things bleed out that, you know, people who have actually had the vaccine, who were tests for it, have found that there were some, you know, it felt like they were getting a lower dose version of the actual coronavirus. They felt, you know, there were other kinds of side effects associated with it. Their arms hurt. Think about flu vaccines and how portable they are, how easy they are, how people are engaged with them. And then this is just takes it to a whole different level, and I don't think we understand yet what it's going to mean to say I'm going to have the Moderna one or I'm going to have the Pfizer one and what we think about all of those things.
We were told this morning that it would come at no cost, that 95% effectiveness or 90% is a lot better than the typical flu vaccine, and that you do not contract COVID-19. You might have a sore spot, you might have muscle aches or a headache, but that's not COVID, even though you might think you were getting COVID. That is not what you will be getting. You know, Steve Dale from WGN Radio here is a participant in the Moderna trial. He's going to be on with Anna, I think, a little later on, right, Pete? So we'll hear a little bit about what his experience was as a participant. You get the shot, and then 21 days later, you get the booster shot, and I guess a lot of us are used to that sort of vaccination regimen, right, Elise?
We are, but so let's talk about the shingle vaccine. So the new Shingrix vaccine, Shingrix is how they pronounce it, came out and it started getting recommended this year for people over the age of, I think it's 50, and maybe for people who have had shingles or who might be more at risk for it. And it's a two-part dose, so you have to take it, and then 3 months later, I think it's 3 months, maybe it's a month, there's some period of time where you have to go and get part two, and they have to reserve it for you. And it's a little more complicated than just walking into Costco or Walgreens or any 100 other places and just saying, oh, I'll take a flu shot right now. And so people will have to understand exactly what they need to think about when they go and they get these things. So, for example, my mother was getting her Shingrix shot, and she wanted the pneumonia shot and the flu shot, and they said, hang on, it's not recommended that you get all of those together on the same day, so why don't we schedule it out for you? I think we're going to face questions like that, that, again, we don't know the answers to just yet.
My sister went through shingles recently, and she texted all of us siblings and said, get that Shingrix shot. You do not want shingles, and you can get it later in life. And
right.
So that's probably good advice for all of us. Talk to me a little bit about what you're hearing about the transition. Where is the Biden administration on being up to speed with stock supplies and the inner workings of maybe the CDC? Do you have much information or insight on that?
Well, one of the things that has come out this morning about the transition team is that President-elect Biden has announced he is going to hold next Monday morning, I think it's Monday, joint meetings with union leaders and CEOs of major retail, automotive, and technology companies. The idea being that he wants to get his vision for how we're going to bring back better, which was his campaign slogan, how he's going to get the economy re-engaged on all levels. And this will be the first time that President-elect Biden has sort of formally convened business and labor leaders to discuss the economic recovery agenda. What's interesting is who's actually supposed to be there. So Microsoft CEO has said they're going to be there. General Motors CEO Mary Barra is going to be there. Target's chairman and chief executive will be there, and the CEO of Gap are all going to attend. It's going to be held virtually. But then we also have labor leaders, including the AFL-CIO president, SEIU president, Mary Kay Henry, the UAW, and a bunch of the other major union organizations. And the idea is to bring everybody together to try and have a discussion about moving forward through the economic consequences that we've all experienced.
Well, if these two vaccines, and maybe we'll get a third one that's even easier to use or distribute, it just seems to me like something sure looks like it's going to hit. That's why the market is responding. That's why travel stocks and the entertainment industry have been lifted first with Pfizer and even more so today with Moderna, right? I mean, you do see the light at the end of the tunnel here, don't you?
You absolutely do. But there's caution, right? Because we've had a lot of cutbacks. So, for example, in the airline industry, yes, people are going to be, you know, pushing forward and they're going to get on airplanes again. And yet today, Americans said that they were cutting a serious number of flights from the U.S. to London over the holiday season because nobody's traveling. We are seeing airlines start to give up the middle seat as of the end of the year into January. Southwest had held those a third open. Delta had held the middle seats open, but now they're going to start to book those seats as well. They're really desperate for revenue. And so I think we have a little ways to go. And every time you go through that and you extend the damage, even with the light at the end of the tunnel, there's an economic consequence to it. And I think trying to focus on how we reopen hotels in a major way is important. So, for example, my sister was supposed to come in for Thanksgiving next week from New York, and they were going to stay at a hotel downtown. The hotel was only scheduled to have 10% occupancy for Thanksgiving week, a week they're normally very busy.
Here in Chicago?
Here in Chicago. And normally there's a whole bunch of big conferences going on at McCormick Place that kind of surround Thanksgiving week. So all of those are canceled. People who normally come here for that holiday week to shop for, do the, you know, Black Friday shopping and then light the lights on Michigan Avenue, those people aren't coming. And people who would normally come in to be with their loved ones aren't coming. And so there are just a lot of people who lost their jobs, who then have been out of work for a long time. Maybe they'll be available to come back. Maybe there's new people that'll need to be hired. I think that one of the estimates today for when the travel and hospitality industry gets back to quote-unquote normal is 2025. So I think there's some time, whether it's next year, the year after that, we need to build back all of these different jobs and processes and the comfort to going and doing the kind of traveling and shopping we used to.
2025 sure takes the wind out of my sails. Wow.
I'm sorry, John.
You know,
some things will be faster, though.
Every year for the last 20, we are downtown on Thanksgiving Day at my house. We go to a movie and then we eat out. That's our Thanksgiving tradition, the five of us. So I have a sort of on-the-ground view of what shopping is like Thanksgiving Day and the day after. And it is fascinating to me how many Chinese travel to Chicago to shop and are here Thanksgiving Day. And when you go into Water Tower Place on Thanksgiving afternoon, it is packed. And the percentage of Chinese to Americans is about, I'm going to go 7-1, 8-1. It's bizarre. And it's not bad. I mean, those are dollars that they're spending in the United States of America, but that's a thing. And I suppose that thing is not going to happen this year for sure, right? And hopefully next year. We asked a doctor from Northwestern a little while ago, when do you, you know, sort of, what's your optimistic outlook? And he was the first of fall next year. October, November would be maybe when we would begin to be comfortable and confident that we could go out, you know, shoulder to shoulder.
It's a long slog, John. It's Fauci, Dr. Fauci said today that even with a vaccine, we're going to need masks for a while because there will be people who won't want to take it or can't take the vaccine. There will be restricted populations for a variety of reasons who won't be eligible for it. And we'll all still have to protect ourselves and protect them as we see, you know, the long run. But you are absolutely right. There is light at the end of this very long, dark, depressing tunnel, and we just have to slog through to get there.
By the way, one of our listeners just hung up, but she said that she or he has tickets to Joan Jett. Was that at Soldier Field? Where is Joan Jett scheduled to perform, Pete? That was at Wrigley Field. Joan Jett is scheduled to perform at Wrigley Field next, I think it was. Was that September? August. So that was their date for when we're back to normal. Joan Jett, Wrigley Field next August is the optimistic hope there. John, my here's another text. October 1st, 2021 is my over-under on when we get back to normal because I'm going on your Kelly cruise. You know, yeah, I hope so. I hope I am. I hope you are, too. I mean, that's the thing, too, for the travel industry. You can't just say, oh, good, the stores are open. I'll run down the street. You need to make those plans now for travel next fall or summer if you're going to do that. At least that's normally how it's done. And by the way, I'll just say this, Elise, about Kelly Cruises. If you do book that trip with us in the fall, there's quite a few months now before you would not be able to get your money back. So, you know, you can sign up for some of these things. They are being smarter about forgiveness, you know, down the road. Something to think about anyway. Elise, any last notes from you on your list of topics there today?
Oh, I think that, you know, we have to keep watching the unemployment numbers. I think we're going to start to see a bit of a spike again with the shutdowns that we're experiencing across the country. And again, it's short-term pain, but we've got a light at the end of the tunnel. We got to keep watching that.
This is Think Glink for Elise Glink. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you, Elise.
Thank you, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:34. You're listening to WGN Radio. Jim Dahlke is a senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Welcome back, Jim. I hope you're well.
Hey, John. Great to be here. I'm doing great.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what Amazon is doing and how they're trying to make it smarter and safer to deliver merchandise to people's homes. Catch us up a little bit on this.
That's right. So just last week, Amazon announced that it's expanding its in-garage delivery service. It's funny, you know, it's something that 10, 15, 20 years ago would have sounded crazy, right? A delivery guy opening up your garage and putting packages in there. But that's exactly what Amazon has been doing over the last year or so, and kind of piloted this project with a couple dozen cities, and now just last week announced it's bringing the service to about 4,000 more cities across the U.S. It's working with a local company, the Chamberlain Group, which is an Oak Brook-based garage door opening business, working with its technology, the MyQ connected garage door tech. And essentially what it's doing is allowing Amazon delivery workers to have a one-time access code to your garage and put your packages in your garage rather than on your front stoop, which may be a victim to porch pirates or other kind of damage. And so really interesting to see that this service has taken off. Amazon says that since it launched the service, it's fulfilled over 2 million in-garage deliveries just in the select cities that it was operating. So definitely some interest among folks to use the service, and Amazon now expanding it to even more cities.
Including Chicago. Does that work for condominium buildings as well?
That's a great question. If you have a garage in your condominium, I'm assuming you'll be able to use the service as well. But I do believe this is definitely kind of targeted more for a suburban audience.
I see. Because somebody knocked on our condo door the other day, buzzed one of my colleagues on the board. And so he talked to somebody selling a service like this for Amazon. And it was for our condo building. They would have access to the landing area where our 8 units are. So we have just a very small space where they could put the packets inside instead of piling them up outside. And then the question for the group was, what are you more comfortable with, them having access and the packages are safe, but now that person is in our building and they could go into the garage and who knows what? I'm, to be honest with you, not that nervous about that scenario, but other members of the condo board were. So I guess that would be the same for a homeowner too, right? Are you comfortable that that person has access to your garage now, even though the upside is they safely deliver the package?
It's a great question. And, you know, Amazon also has a service where it can come into your own home. It works with smart locks on the front of your door, very similarly to this garage service. Amazon has a service where it can do a one-time access into your actual front door of your house, unlocking your smart lock and placing your packages inside. So it's very fascinating, right, because we have all of these conversations going on about, you know, digital privacy, digital security. Meanwhile, you know, we're willing to allow the delivery guy to come into your house, come into your garage. And so I think that that's a really interesting question, for, you know, physical privacy versus digital privacy.
It's funny, I was thinking about that, something along those lines last night, watching 60 Minutes, they were talking about TikTok. And on the one hand, you think, hey, it's a silly video channel, and who cares if the Chinese own it? And then there was a guy on 60 Minutes last night going, they have access, the government will have access to private information about you as a result of this. So tell your dancing kids that that makes us vulnerable. I'm not sure how to score that.
I'm really fascinated by the whole thing, honestly, as, you know, and rightfully so, people are very cognizant of their digital privacy and digital security and very concerned about it and what bad actors can do. Meanwhile, services like Airbnb allow me to open up my house and let a stranger come in and sleep in my bed for the weekend while I'm out of town. And Uber allows me to allow strangers in the backseat of my car for a trip to the airport. And so it's very interesting that we have kind of allowed ourselves some comfortability with services like that, while at the same time we're very nervous about our digital privacy. I'm not sure, you know, if one is necessarily right or wrong, but, you know, I think what we have found is that in the physical spaces, you know, most people are not serial killers, right? Like the Airbnb feature actually works pretty well. You know, the number of, you know, tragedies, right, is very low. The number of incidents that are you know, really troubling are actually much smaller than anybody, I think, would have ever imagined, you know, when we were pitching Airbnb to investors on day one, right? So I think that those things end up actually working a lot more safer than we think they will. And I think with Amazon as well, the number of instances of foul play with somebody dropping a package in your garage is extremely low.
I hope so, and that rings true what you're saying. I think we sort of discovered the same thing about Uber and Lyft. There are tragic stories we could find, but by and large, people get into Uber and Lyft. I saw somebody do it the other day. You know, people, to the degree they're taking public transportation, are doing so safely. Red Lobster is opening its first delivery-only operation in Chicago. A, Red Lobster is still a going thing, and B, what's the news on that?
That's right. So Red Lobster has launched its very first quote-unquote ghost kitchen. What essentially these are just operations for making food and delivering it to your house. So nobody's coming in here and sitting at this Red Lobster. So this is Ghost Kitchen. It's open in the South Loop on Wabash Ave. And Red Lobster's first such ghost kitchen in the country now, where they're really kind of doubling down on increased takeout delivery. Like most restaurants, Red Lobster is probably seeing quite a bit of a dip in dining, but it's seeing quite a bit of an uptick in their ordering online and their delivery. And so Red Lobster really kind of doubling down on this. And interesting to see that they picked Chicago, and they're going to be kind of using this and partnering with third-party delivery companies like DoorDash, Uber Eats, Grubhub to facilitate the delivery. So interesting to see Red Lobster among the many companies kind of jumping in on the ghost kitchen train.
So is the brick and mortar no seats at all? It's like a new facility where they're just cooking food for delivery, or is this an old restaurant they've just transitioned and maybe we'll end up sitting there sometime in the future?
Yeah, so this is going to be a delivery-only operation. So you're not going to have any seats here. This is doesn't appear to be something that's going to eventually transition into an eventually brick-and-mortar sit-down restaurant.
Boy, you wonder what the future of restaurants are like. Look at that. They're opening up a restaurant that has no seats because they expect it's going to be this way long enough that investment pays off, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think consumer trends are going to change, you know, even when there is a vaccine and, you know, the worry of COVID is gone, right? I think that the people, there will be a percentage of people who just will prefer to eat at home, will prefer to use takeout, and are going to, in some percentage, you know, forego the in-dining experience altogether. I do think a lot of it will come back, right? There's no way that in-person dining is going away by any stretch of the imagination, but there are going to be some people whose, you know, consumer behaviors are completely changed because of what the last 9 months have been.
Okay, Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. By the way, on your website, a really interesting story, too, that you wrote about Northwestern University and 3D printing of tissues and organs. Very fascinating, and I recommend you go there and read that. We'll visit again next week, Jim. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Jim Dahlke is a senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Let's go into the WGN Radio Newsroom and visit with Steve Ruxton.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Illinois is becoming a major player in sports betting. The latest numbers released by the Illinois Gaming Board indicate bettors in the state wagered more than $285 million on sports contests in September. Sports betting has generated about $3 million in tax revenues for Illinois in its first three full months. California-based Guitar Center is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Company owns about 300 centers, including 13 in Illinois, one of them on North Halsted Street in Chicago. Cinnabon is rolling out its signature cream cheese frosting by the pint for consumers across the U.S. to purchase in time for the holiday season. Now, the icing will be sold separately for $5.99 at its 900 U.S. locations. It's also available for purchase through food delivery apps. I'm Steve Ruxton. That's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Gook joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy, we were talking about Thanksgiving a little while ago and how people are using Zoom as a way to connect with families. I know you saw some news about that. What are you looking at?
That's right. So as a gesture of good faith for that time, Zoom has announced that they will drop the 40-minute limit on Zoom calls for Thanksgiving. So as you, I'm sure, know, if you are in the free membership tier of Zoom, at 40 minutes, you get a notification and your call is done. That's kind of it. Now, some people really enjoy that because then you kind of have an out for a meeting. Sorry, the 40-minute limit's coming. Time to go.
Yeah.
If you have a paid version of Zoom, of course, you can go much longer. But because Zoom said they want people to be able to connect with their families without having to, you know, stuff their face really quick and talk and then jump off or like call back or something like that. They want people to be able to enjoy Thanksgiving safely from afar with their families. So they announced via social media, their tweet said, as a thank you to our customers, we'll be lifting the 40-minute limit for all our meetings globally from midnight Eastern on November 26th through 6 a.m. Eastern on November 27th. So your family gatherings don't get cut short. And they have used hashtag Zoom together. So that they're, you know, kind of a nice little cheery bit of news, when things have been so difficult for so many, that to see a company like Zoom, which so many people are depending on right now for their communication, for their connecting, not just with their business, but also for their families and friends, nice to see them doing that to celebrate Thanksgiving.
Many of our reporters have been chiming in on observations or other tidbits of information about this Moderna news. Any thoughts from you about how that's working its way through the news world today?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been interesting to watch on social media, and I'm sure I don't have anything to add that other people have not already said. But, you know, I think it's very interesting to see markets react when there's an uptick of news. I think it's been interesting all year. The littlest bit of news, even news that we know is several months out, to see the markets react with so much optimism, you know, in such a stark way this year, I think has been really interesting, but it's another one of those kind of we got to wait and see. Of course, last week when I talked about the logistics of all that, I think the Moderna part that's interesting is Moderna leadership saying we wouldn't necessarily need it to be in a sub-zero container to ship it, which is a little bit different from the Pfizer one that we heard about last week with the 90% efficacy in some initial tests. So as those clear their final clinical trials, hopefully successfully, again, I think that'll be interesting to watch the market react and also the shipping and logistics industry.
Yeah. And I guess there's another one in the pipeline that'll have even fewer logistical issues, so hooray, which then is good news for travel stocks, airlines, airplane manufacturers. I know you follow the airline industry pretty closely. Any news there for us?
Yeah, there's a really interesting test. I may have mentioned this a couple of weeks ago as a possibility, but it started today. So United Airlines is testing a trial of rapid COVID tests in that London to New York corridor right there. That is one of the busiest travel routes right there. So many people every day going back and forth between London and Newark and JFK, all the different airports. But in particular, Newark is where this one's originating. And the hope is that this will help bypass the 14-day mandatory quarantine on the British side, help people trying to fly here from the UK to be able to do so. It will not be every single flight. It will be certain select flights. And if you're on that flight, by the time you take off, you know everybody on that plane is COVID negative. And in doing that, they're, you know, hoping to encourage some officials on both sides to maybe think about a way that we could kind of start reopening a little bit of travel. So if you don't want to take that test, if you're on a United flight, you don't want to do that, you'll just be rebooked on another flight that doesn't have that pilot happening, where you're still going to be subject to the requirements of quarantine on whichever direction you're traveling. Those results will be shared with officials on both sides of that. So both UK and US officials will know your COVID status from that point out. But, you know, I think it's another way that we're seeing the travel industry really trying to think creatively to move despite everything that's going on and recover some of that revenue. International travel revenue is such a large driver for United and many other airlines. But if there was business travel, and there's not a ton they can do about business travel right now, so thinking creatively about this kind of travel and opening routes, as we've seen some other airlines do, where they're specifically looking at catering to more leisure travelers, and as you and I talked about a few weeks ago, also airlines looking at where are diaspora populations in the U.S. to try to open those international routes. So this is another leg of that. But if this is successful, this could have a huge impact on that transatlantic travel corridor right there, which is normally a very, very big and profitable one for United.
Ring video doorbells, what's the news there?
Oh, my gosh. I did not see this coming, but the Ring video doorbells, a lot of people have these, you know, the doorbell rings and you see on your phone who's there. Well, there's a particular model that if you have installed it with not the right screws, it can be a fire hazard. So a recall has been issued. Amazon is recalling 350,000 of the Ring video surveillance doorbells in the U.S., another 8,700 of them in Canada. This recall notice happened November 10th. If you Google this recall notice, or if you go to Ring support page, you can enter your serial number to see if this is the model that is in question. It's the second generation model. I would read this long number on the air, but people are better off just kind of Googling it. Mm-hmm. It's either the device serial number either has a DNS or an S/N on it, but you can enter that in the Ring support page, and it will tell you if this is one that is of concern. And so they've received reports of these particular screws becoming flammable. So there have been some doorbells that they have ignited, they've caused property damage, some people have received some minor burns, things like that. So just nobody has, like, lost their whole house, but it's been some, they've described it as minor property damage due to this igniting. So nobody wants that. So
yes,
everybody,
igniting.
If you have the Ring doorbell, go check it out and make sure that you are not part of that recall.
Another way to know is look at the video, and if there's a fire truck there, then you may have one of the defective screws, but better that you go online. All right, we're out of time. Amy, good to hear you. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks so much, John.